Bob Jones, what would you say after all these years would be your official title?
I mean, I was the producer up until last year of the Folk Festival since we came back in 85. This year I'm more of a consultant to the fellow Jay Sweet, who's the associate producer, and I'm a senior producer, but basically it's a team effort doing the producing.
Yes. And you were here for the first time. Tell me the year.
1963. I was here in 62, but I worked in 63.
At that time, there were workshops going on. Why don't you describe, paint me a scene from what it was like.
Well, the festival in 63 was still basically downtown in Newport. It was held at Freebody Park. And the workshops were held down the street on Memorial Boulevard at a school called St. Michael's School.
And a workshop might be someone coming in learning ballads. What would work? Well, describe a work.
There were varied workshops. There'd be a blues workshop. There were topical songs. There were bluegrass. There were banjo. There were instrument, oriented workshops. Singers, all kinds of different kinds of things. In most cases, there were multiple artists were involved. Probably the most famous was in 63, there was a big blues workshop where the first time anybody since way, way back heard Skip James play for the first time. Somebody discovered him, and the first notes he played after he came out of the hospital were at the festival.
And then you'd have the talent, people who were going to be on stage in the evening.
Exactly. The talent that was going to be playing in the evening very often would play at the workshops. In those days, everyone was getting paid $50 a day, including people like Dylan and Joan. The money which was made helped to support the Newport Folk Foundation, which is actually still in existence, and that actually was there to perpetuate the folk music world, as it were, within the states. And we did very well with that, actually.
It was very much a counterculture thing. It was very much music that wasn't on radio. It was music that people were hoping to keep alive, and in many of the new artists coming along, making it new and fresh.
Well, not totally now. Remember that in that period, I mean, the people that were on the top of the charts in some of those years were people like Peter, Paul, and Mary, the Rooftop Singers, I've forgotten who they were. There were a number of them. And Dylan, of course. And they were the draws so that other people could be heard. That's when you went to see Dylan, you end up hearing Mississippi John Hurt, which was the real plus for us folkies, as we say. That was the plus. Everybody got to hear lots of different things.
Do you see any parallels to the festival as it is these days?
Well, we don't have Mississippi John Hurt's popping up every day, but we do have other people, very young, new artists that we place. And the festival has always had that tradition of presenting some new artists that, for generally speaking, the public has not been aware of, even the folk public or even the indie pop public, which is very much the case this year. The festival has always presented people that are a little bit out of sorts. I mean, people forget that we played Janis Joplin, we played James Taylor, Van Morrison, all these kind of people, and they were saying, what are these people doing on the festival? But it was always like that. We had popular people who would draw people in to see, and then we didn't pounce on them, but we sort of forced them to hear others in the long in-between things.
And most of those people who you mentioned were totally inspired by that folk movement and those folk artists who were there. They heard the big box set of folk music
right.
That came out, and so it was a natural connection.
Yeah, very much so. And there were some other major differences in the way the festival is structured now, although we operate totally in the daytime here, except for the one nighttime. But in those days, the workshops were always held in the day and the big night concerts. And the big night concerts might have been large in the sense of who they attracted, but the fact that they would have 12 people on in a given night, and some people would only do two tunes, three tunes. I mean, Dylan went electric. I think he did four tunes, and he did an encore with the fifth tune. People sort of forget that. So the major audience, and in those days we were drawing 20, 24,000 people, they got to hear a whole bunch of people on the bill. I mean, the woman who played before Dylan went electric, I can't remember her name, now all of a sudden it slipped me, but she was this crazy Nashville woman who was out there. You know, I have to remember which one it was. Nobody would have further. I mean, not many people were the further. I mean, Eric von Schmidt was on that concert. There were a whole bunch of people who were other than the big star kind of people. You know.
And then there was a Sunday. It changed. It became to be the Sunday afternoon of new folk.
Sunday afternoon.
With the Richard and Mimi Farinas.
Right. Sunday afternoon was organized in the latter years, mostly by Peter Yarrow. And the board, which there was a board which chose the artists.
Tell us the board. It's Theodore Bickel.
Well, in those days it was Theodore Bickel, Gene Ritchie, Pete Seeger was on the board for a while, Bernice Reagan was on the board. Peter was on the board, obviously. George was on the board.
George Ween.
And the board shifted a little bit. But they were very wide in the, Alan Lomax, which was an important member of the board. They were very wide in their view of what could be played. And the board was also very influential in the sense that they sent this fellow named Ralph Rinsler, who I worked with. Ralph was the one. They would send Ralph and I out in the spring and sometimes in the fall to find certain people. Alan Lomax was, for example, was convinced we would find a certain group of Cajuns, some black Cajun singers. And he said, no, you have to go. We went a couple of times. And he said, no, they're there. We went back and we actually did find them. I mean, so they were very influential in the sense of finding more of the traditional people. And Peter and others who sort of on the scene of the younger, newer people obviously knew who the people he thought would be working well. As you mentioned, Richard and Mimi. One year the New Folks concert was James Taylor, Van Morrison, Jerry Jeff Walker. I've forgotten who else. That was enough, I think, at that point. You know.
And then what years, but this sort of fell on hard times and sort of folded up?
Yeah, fell on hard times in 1971 when we had some problems with the jazz festival and the city canceled the festival in 71. Bonnie Raitt was due to play in that festival. And then, so with the jazz festival and the folk festival left Newport. And George and the staff that we had, there were about four or five of us, always felt that the combination of those festivals, we basically took and played when we started the New Orleans Festival. It was the combination of jazz and folk festival that put together the basic format for the Jazz and Heritage Festival in New Orleans. There was a foundation, which is like we had in the folk festival. There were crafts, which we had at the folk, and there was lots of jazz, obviously, which we had at the jazz festival. So we felt that in one way it sort of never left us in our hearts anyway. And then when we came back in 81 with the Jazz Festival, the state asked us if we would try to do something else. They wanted to keep the fort, the park here, and get some activity. So we came back in 85 with the Folk Festival, and it's been here ever since.
You have to have a memory, 20 memories, 100 memories, but something must pop to mind every time you think Newport Folk Festival for you.
Probably the blues concert that I mentioned, the blues workshop, hearing Skip James sing for the first time. I mean, many of us in the audience was loaded with blues players because they couldn't believe this was happening. And he opened up and he played these couple of weird diminished chords. I'll never forget it. And then he suddenly came out in this unbelievable falsetto, which is a song called Devil Got My Woman, I think it was. And I remember some of us, we couldn't believe it. I mean, it sounded better than the records we'd ever heard in our life. And we were just like, whoa, we couldn't believe this. One of the other events was, I remember Joan on certain nights. There's a number of those.
Joan Baez.
I remember Dylan, because we played them both ways. And another one I remember very much, though, was Mary Chapin Carpenter. Mary Chapin Carpenter had a date in Pennsylvania, and she had to go on first at the folk festival here. She was getting on first, and then she had to race into a bus and drive off to Pennsylvania. And she went on, and it was her first, when she had the first big hits, and she went on, and she was like, I was just like dynamite from the very beginning. It was like, bam! And she played this 45-minute set, and the place went crazy. And she couldn't stay. You know, she said, I can't stay. I'm dying to stay, but I can't stay. I've got to do this date. And I think that was one of the best performances of any artist I've ever seen. Of course, there are many others, don't get me wrong.
Is the Bob Dylan thing just overplayed, or was it as important and a shift in music as I think of it?
I'm not so sure it was a shift in music. I think it was a shift in philosophy for lots of people. I think there's a fellow named Joe Boyd, who is a very good friend of mine. We've often talked about this. Joe and I were in Cambridge together for many years. And I always thought, as Joe did, Joe actually was a sort of initiating this idea. I always thought that it was a switch of allegiances in the minds of many of the folk fans. I think the folk fans politically always felt they had, oh, finally, we have this great spokesman who's popular and he can sort of speak for us all. And everybody's listening to him. And then suddenly he goes into this other world of rock. And in those days, rock was not that much involved in a political nature. And I think they felt, I don't want to say betrayed, but let down. And I think that's why they were more upset than anything else. I don't think they were musically upset. And certainly the going electric was not really an issue. I mean, many groups have played electric at the festival before. Paul Butterfield had played that afternoon. There were electric blues bands who played. I mean, that was not really the issue.
And people knew that a chance that Dylan was going to play electric, as his songs were electric at that point. Yeah. When you think of the shift of folk music to being a music that is sort of talking about the times, talking about people, the sort of music that Dylan was writing was, you know, the furthest thing from protest. It was very much more internalized music. It was much more poetic. It was, and I mean, when I say it was a shift in music, that's how I look at it. It was a shift in the way you think about writing songs and what you're singing about.
Immediately after that, I mean, I think the moves were much more so in that direction that you just mentioned. And maybe that also had a big part of it. But Maggie's Farm, I've forgotten what the other tunes were.
Well, Like a Rolling Stone was his hit that came out just a few weeks before the festival.
And, I mean, I think that, I mean, there's a lot in that as well. But I still think that the audience felt deserted, kind of, you know. And, I happen to be an enormous Dylan fan. I mean, I'm just more lyrically minded than anything. I mean, words mean more than anything else to me and anybody's singers and so forth. So to me, he was just the greatest thing, and still is, I mean, as far as I'm concerned. I've known him quite well, and I mean, years ago, I don't know him that well now, but I just felt that he was a genius as far as writing. And I traveled with, for example, I did a lot of traveling with Duke Ellington, and I always put them in the same sort of boat. I mean, they're both going to play till they finish. They both love what they're doing. They both want to get out and hear their music played by themselves. They change all the time. I mean, it's wonderful in my mind. Just wonderful. And the fact that Dylan helps us as a Newport Folk Festival because of the legends of what you mentioned, the 65, and then when he came back, I mean, certainly we're very grateful for that.
Anybody that you're looking forward to hearing at this year's festival that you've either heard about or you've seen somewhere that you look forward to seeing him on a stage here
over
at Newport?
I happen to be a big Over the Rhine fan.
Over the Rhine are a band from
Cincinnati. There's a wonderful section called Over the Rhine in Cincinnati, and I lived there for 9 years. So that's how I first knew about the group. There's a group called, I'm a bluegrass fan as well, so One Flew South, which is a kind of bluegrass offshoot. It's very much like Crosby, Stills, and Nash. They can sing like birds. I mean, canaries. They're just wonderful singers. Some of the other people, I'm interested in this here, Brandy Carlile, Levon, I'm very interested in hearing to sing. And Jimmy, I've heard Jimmy off and on.
Jimmy Buffett.
To see what he does. Yeah.
That's the one that you look at the list and you go, huh? What are you expecting from Jimmy Buffett here?
You know, I've known Jimmy. He doesn't know me that well, but he knows the family and, I mean, our family pretty well, but he knows my daughter quite well. Jimmy is a songwriter. Jimmy started out doing this stuff, started out like the Willie Masons in our life. I mean, he sang at Passim's, which is this club that I've been associated with, which was then Club 47 for years. And, a lot of people have those roots, and it'll be very interesting to see what he does. I mean, I'm going to be interested. I'm sure others will be interested, and we'll have to see what happens in it. I doubt it's going to be the kind of Parrothead show, but I know a lot of Parrothead fans. This music is wonderful. It's very good, nice music, and it's well done. And Jimmy is a very interesting person. I mean, he was a very close friend of Ed Bradley's, who I knew, my wife and I knew quite well, and it was, you know, he is a very sincere person. He always used to tell us in New Orleans, Bob, because my daughter used to run the big stage with him, Bob, don't worry, I'm going to play Newport one of these days. And I said, Jimmy, when you're ready, I'll hear from you. So I'm ready, and now we're going to hear from him. So
great. Thanks so much.
Okay. Great. Appreciate talking.
Appreciate it.